Welcome to Hot Boga. This podcast is sponsored by ASAC Camo, the camo you wear hunting, not on a date. All right, next one up. Our next sponsor is New Breed Archery. Check out their custom options at newbreedarchery.com and have your next bow shipped direct to your door.
All right. Next one is Black Eagle Arrows. I miss the target a lot, and I have yet to break a Black Eagle arrow. I don't know why. I don't know what kind of voodoo magic they use to make these things so strong, but I love it. Check them out.
Our next sponsor is Steerka Optics. Stay Steerka strong and check out a whole new level of optics with unparalleled clarity and an unparalleled warranty.
Are you Steerka strong?
That was weak.
Strong.
I wasn't ready.
That's getting cut out.
You know, that'll get cut out.
Yeah, that'll get cut out.
That's fine. All right, next up is Seek Outside. They make incredibly strong, light gear. So if you want a light pack that can haul a lot of weight, if you want to be warm in a teepee out in the middle of the woods, check them out. They make amazing gear. Seek Outside. Finally, our last sponsor is Burris. They make some fantastic, innovative, durable, and accurate products, especially the new Oracle bow sight. It's going to change the way you hunt. Check them out.
I mean, it's awesome. I mean, Spring Bear is pretty, it's pretty casual compared to other stuff, but yeah, it's a good time.
Yeah, I just watched a video. I think you and the Gritty Bowman and Aaron Snyder. I thought I saw like Ryan Callahan there doing a, look like a Spring Bear hunt too.
Yeah, Cal's been up, man, moose and a couple times with bears. You know, now he's organizing, you know, he'll bring some folks up from different magazines and stuff, but yeah, life has changed for Ryan Callahan since I first met him about 20 years ago with Rob Smolak. So
we know Rob through ASAT. So what's the connection between Rob and you?
Well, I've known Rob. Rob was one of the, you know, the first few years when I started in the mid-90s. Rob was a client of mine for, I don't even know, he's done 3 or 4 or 5 mule deer, about the same whitetail. He's come up for bear a few times. And then, yeah, just kind of lost track of Rob probably 5 years ago. And okay. Honestly, I've not really talked or seen Rob. I know he got remarried and has a little baby. And yeah, Rob's a good dude. And Callahan at the time was just a kid. I don't even know if he was, you know, whatever, in his early 20s, maybe even 20, when I first met him. And he was Rob's camera guy. And,
oh, really?
I followed Rob around. Oh, yeah. And so that's how I got to know Callahan, is just as a whippersnapper, getting his feet wet. So
he seems to be doing all right for himself now.
Yeah, he did grow up, and Cal's doing, you know, Cal's making a difference. And it's good to see. He's, you know, he's Johnny big time now. So he's got all sorts of stuff on the go. So great dudes, both of them.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I figure, you know, Joe's running a little late. You want to just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about who you are and, you know, your background?
Sure. My name is Jeff Lander, and I own Primitive Outfitting. Been outfitting now for 23 years. Started off in the Edmonton Bow Zone with whitetail, a couple tags, and kind of grew that to where I had 14 tags in the Bow Zone back when whitetail in Canada was kind of the big thing before quality deer management hit the Midwest, so to speak, and then branched out into mule deer in Southeast Alberta. Still doing that. I'm not doing the whitetails anymore. And probably 12 years ago, I bought an area in British Columbia, primarily for spring bear, moose, grizzlies, a little bit of elk there. Nothing that I would ever book strictly for an elk hunt, but there are some there.
Okay.
Handful of goats, but mostly bear and moose. Now the grizzlies shut down, it's strictly black bear and moose over there. So yeah, been doing it a while.
So what made you decide to be a guide in the first place? It seems like it's like every, you know, young hunter's dream to do that, but very few people actually do it.
You know, I was actually, you know, I got my bachelor's in counseling and then my master's. And so when I was working on my master's, I worked with a guy in the Edmonton Bow Zone, just kind of guiding a little bit for whitetail, nothing about whitetail, a little bit with baited black bear up in northern Alberta, which I hated.
Why is that?
But that's kind of how, just dirty work, man. You got, you know, 50-gallon barrels full of rotten beavers yeah. that you're grabbing with a hay hook, and they're slapping you in the face with gunk and
Date I had.
Yeah, exactly. It's so yeah, it wasn't a real pleasant experience. And But it, I mean, it was vital for what I was doing. I realized that, you know, I'm making these guys some money and not making a lot. So I was kind of doing that a little bit while I was doing my schooling. And then just kind of, you know, after a while with counseling and dealing with, you know, drugs and alcohol and suicides, it just got old, or not old. It just was difficult. So
it's going to wear on you a little bit.
Yeah, it does. It does. And so I just kind of branched out. And like I said, I started off with two tags, you know, in the Edmonton Bow Zone, and then just kind of worked up from there. Alberta's a little different than BC in the fact that you can buy a tag. You know, you can be an outfitter in Alberta and own one tag, whereas in BC you got to buy an area, which is pretty expensive for most of them. So kind of had to build up to that, and it just kind of happened and got in at the right time by meeting guys like Rob Smolak and others that, you know, was able to, at that time, there's no such thing as social media.
Right.
You know, so Rob was doing, you know, like videos, selling videos. And I think had a TV show for a while, but like Bowhunter Magazine and guys like that I brought in, traditional Bowhunter, TJ and Don Thomas and those guys. So it just kind of hit it at the right time. And it, you know, it took off from there.
So you started entrepreneurial move. You start your own outfitting business and it takes off immediately. Do you have a lot of clients right away? How'd that work?
Not really, but I was, I was still able to have, you know, my other job. So it wasn't like I was married to my first wife. I had three little kids. So just kind of slowly built it up. And, you know, and it, like I said, in Alberta and Edmonton, that was the place for giant whitetails. I mean, there's still giant whitetails there. I'm actually going out on Monday to hunt the last 5 days of the season, but it's still a destination. But now, I mean, heck, you can go Iowa, Kansas, you know, Illinois, wherever, you kill huge whitetails.
So I do remember growing up seeing that, though, those on the videos, the old videos of guys going up to, out there.
You'd pick up on the way to deer camp.
Yeah, but it was always up there. It was not in Iowa, you know, at least when I was young.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, it's just so cold. I mean, it's just brutal. And at that, you know, it's warmed up a little bit, but it's, you know, next week is going to be nice, which is great. But yeah. I hunt primarily out of the, I got a couple sweet redneck blinds that, yeah, it's pretty posh, but
that keeps you warm. That's huge though. I mean, it gets cold. I was out this morning and it got in the teens for the first time, at least when, you know, for the first time hunting out in back in Michigan. And I was cold just sitting there. I was freezing this morning. I'm still cold.
Not acclimated yet.
You know, the gear has changed though, man. The gear has changed.
It has.
And now you can, you know, do all sorts of stuff to keep yourself warm and, you know, with wool and all the other stuff that's in everywhere. It is tolerable.
Yeah.
I've kind of come to the point where I'm going to hunt smarter, not harder. And plan ahead, which when you're young and in your 20s, you just, you know, pile up a tree and you might forget to, you know, to wear boots or.
There's a couple of us in our 20s still here.
One of us present in the 20s. Yeah, and I've never seen you climb up a tree, so let's just take it easy there too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, one day you'll, you know, your circulation sucks. I mean, I'm 53 and still will hunt out of a tree stand and that's fine. But yeah, the days of minus 30.
Yeah.
And just kind of holding on and, you know, I shoot a longbow. So, you know, my longbow goes from 53 pounds to 63 pounds in that kind of weather and all the clothes. And I still wear King of the Mountain though. I mean, it's real cool. It's just a tradition that I do, but, Smolak has hung out in a tree up there and that kid is, I mean, he's not a kid, he's my age, but he's skinny.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It would kill him. I mean, he had no fat on him, so but he'd hang in there.
I think that's why I get colder than you guys, because I'm not loaded up with fat like you guys are.
Easy.
Yeah, shots fired.
Insulation.
I was just showing these guys. I got a black toe still from Colorado from getting a little too chilly out there.
You get that thing checked out.
I know it's pretty gross, but you can just hack that thing right off. It doesn't feel. Actually, it feels. I feel.
It's starting to smell a little weird.
Yeah, dogs are always bothering with
there
it.
There you go, draining out. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, it's nasty, but. No, it's nice. It's nice to have nicer gear, especially like merino base layers. Just that alone is huge.
Mm-hmm. I wore it down in Texas this year. It was 106 degrees Fahrenheit. We were hunting Axis, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, it keeps you less stinky too, you know. So just you know, as I'm thinking, I've always been interested in people that guide because it sounds like such a cool thing to do. Maybe can you describe what your, you know, your season is like? So you come back, you do spring bear hunt. Is there any preparation that you're doing ahead of time? And then after spring bear, I mean, are you, you're getting ready for mule deer, or, you know, what's the average day look like for you?
Well, I mean, you know, BC is a spot and stock only deal. So, you know, you're not preparing baits and you're not mixing grain and you're not doing this and that, which is a lot of work that a lot of the guys out east Alberta on are doing. Yeah. So my biggest, you know, when I show up, I usually get in there 3 or 4 days ahead of time. My biggest issue is freeze up. Like I shut the thing down and I drain it and just hope that it's, you know, usually it's one of my guides that drains it. And then it's, this year we were, went the first 12 days with no water. So it was because it was frozen between the creek. I mean, it's basically a gravity fed system and you just kind of wait, got to wait for it to clear. So you're hauling water and doing whatever. So that's about the biggest headache that, that we get out there. You know, I got a ranch house and some outbuildings and stuff. So we just, you know, people come in, we do have a couple outhouses if the bathroom's not working, and then, you know, we got to figure out something with the shower. You know, most guys nowadays are, and the guys I bring in early are dudes that I know.
Sure, right.
Like, you know, the guys from Kafaru or whatever, and they're used to being out with not having a shower. They can use baby wipes and whatever. But, but yeah, then we just get into the flow of things with, you know, with bears. They're pretty, we don't even hunt, we don't hunt bears until the afternoon. So you get up whenever, eat breakfast about 8:30, 9, and then shoot and go look for sheds, or we got a gym out there, whatever, and guys just do what they want to do. And then
why is that?
You know, I think they're lazy. I think those big bears have come out of the den and they're just trying to figure their world out, and you will see them, you know, during the middle of the day and whatnot, but it's usually for about 10 minutes at a time. And so if you see them, and you, I mean, this is for bow hunting. So if you see them and you got to make your move and they go back into the timber and they get your wind, you're not going to see them that night at all. And you might not see them again. So we are very conservative with how we hunt the black bears, at least during May. When you start getting into the rut, they're out moving around a little bit more. But, and that's probably the biggest issue I have with clients, you know, because a lot of them run their own businesses and they're used to being in charge, and they don't to be told what to do. And it's just like, if you want to shoot a bear, you need to listen, because I have these plot watcher cameras out that we used to use for grizzlies, because grizzlies are different. They're out, you know, crack of dawn and whatever. And out of all the photos we've had one bear, and it was like a, not even a 5-footer that was out feeding, you know, early in the morning. The rest of the time we weren't getting pictures of them, and they're, you know, whatever. You will see them, but you just don't have the time to stalk and get close. And then in the evening they come out, they're comfortable, they're going to feed for, you know, a couple hours, and you can really make your move on them. So, and that's kind of how the whole spring goes. I mean, I'll have a maximum of 6 guys in a week starting in mid-May. Early May it's only 4 because of the snow, but the you know, they're out anyway. Right. They once they're out, and you know, you just hit those hot spots. But yeah, it's, I love bears. Bears are intriguing to me.
Now, going back to this, this preparation that you do showing up a couple of days earlier, are you cautious about bumping any of those bears when you're first getting out there and checking all your areas?
I don't even go look at it.
No.
Is that just because you know the land so well, or you've patterned them for so long?
Yeah. I mean, you just know, I mean, they're going to be where they're going to be, and it's not like I need to scout it. Because they, you know, for instance, I have railroad tracks that run through my area. My area is about 980 square miles. And so everything's going to be low. Everything's going to be in the, you know, down low where the grass is starting to grow. So they're concentrated. So, you know, they're going to be on the logging roads, the clear cuts, the meadows, fields, and tracks. And usually early on they're starting to meander around the tracks and in the fields. So,
So you go in a couple days early, you get your guys going. At what point do you switch? You know, do you stick around until, I'm guessing, do you guys do pronghorn up there, or do you go right into like mule deer?
No, I wrap up in the end of June for bears, and then I'm off for the summer. And then usually September, I'll go do my own mule deer hunting the first week of September in Alberta. And I, you know, usually take a bunch of peaches or whatever out to landowners. You can't pay to hunt in Alberta. It's just a handshake deal. So I usually go out and we'll scout, and basically what I'm scouting for at that time is crops and what's what. And then kind of hunt myself on some zones that aren't included in my where I have my tags. And then, you know, I come back out there after moose, which is about the 10th or so of October.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
So how long of stints are these? I mean, you have a family. I mean, what's it like to leave? Are you gone 2 weeks, or, you know, what does that look like?
Well, I mean, my daughters are probably all your guys' age, 29, 28, 26, and they're kind of all over North America and Europe. So,
oh, okay.
I don't have, and I got remarried at, you know, my wife's kids are grown up too. So Lana goes with me usually. Well, she is there for bear camp. She cooks, and my youngest daughter usually comes in and helps. And then Lana will also cook during moose camp, which is, I do two hunts, rut hunts, four guys per hunt. You know, it's a 2-on-1, but there'll be 4 1 week, the last 8 days of September, and then 4 the first 8 days of October. And then she heads back and back to our house, and I head over to Alberta, and I'm usually there for 3 weeks.
Okay.
Doing meal deer. So
when do your clients usually start rolling in then?
Well, for bear, you know, it's a 6-day hunt. So
right.
They'll start this year. I think we start the 5th of May, and, you know, moose is usually the 22nd of September. And then mule deer will be, you know, mid October.
So 3 girls, it sounds like you said you have 3.
Yes.
You know, hunting with 3, I asked because I got a 6-year-old. My wife and I have 1 6-year-old girl who I try to bring hunting a lot. She loves it. It sounds like you're a dad who's figured things out with hunting and daughters. How did that work for you?
You know, it was tough early. I mean, when they're young, because raising kids, especially when they're super young, is probably the most thankless job there is, you know, seriously. And so I would, you know, we moved to BC with my first wife in 88, and I'm just like, holy crap, you know, stone sheep, caribou, moose, flying, you know, this, and I would just go and hunt, and yeah, it wasn't easy, man. It wasn't easy. And when you're young, you know, you're just ambitious to get out there and do it, and sometimes you don't think about, you know, what happens back home. So that wasn't easy. And then when I got into, you know, the outfitting, it still was difficult because I'd be gone. Well, in Edmonton, we lived in Edmonton, so I was able to go home and put fires out when I needed to. But, you know, mule deer, I'd be gone 3 weeks, and I mean, my daughters are pretty pretty active, which right through junior high and high school, they were it was God's payback to me for what I was.
Well, I've got a daughter too. Hopefully payback's not coming.
Yeah, that's right. I want you to know how bad boys are.
I'm trying to prevent with future planning. You know, yeah, just being very nice.
Uh huh. Yeah. Yeah. Well, 6. Yeah. Yeah. About 8 years. Call me back.
We might have to have a sit down.
Jared's gonna have. Oh wait, you already have no hair. I was gonna say more of your hair is gonna fall out, so that can't happen.
So but they got used to it. You know, I mean, my kids are pro game meat and hunting, and they go to bat for me. I mean, they're kind of at that age. Well, one of them anyway, who's just anti anything Republican or anti anything,
right.
You know, that has to do with that, which is the way of our world right now. But, you know, the majority of folks who come in are pro gun and pro,
right.
You know, so right now it's kind of an interesting time trying to have a discussion with somebody who's in their 20s, because mostly my daughters, because you're in a area or a community that is anti anything that we love to do. So,
yeah. You know, I think it's interesting though, this whole push for public lands, or at least around us, we see a lot of the BHA
yep.
stuff and public mm-hmm. land. And I feel like that movement has actually pushed people on the left more in line with a lot of hunting things, at least that we're seeing.
Yes, for sure. For sure. And the whole emphasis on the meat, which is a big tag word right now, a big hashtag, you know, is organic meat. Everyone's down with that.
Right.
Even the non-hunters that want to be healthy. So, and I think guys like Ranella, Callahan, I mean, they're kind of leading the way, you know, and there's a bunch of other ones too. I'm just throwing those guys out there.
Yeah, they're really well known.
You know, I watched BHA go from nothing to, like, I was down there this last year. I donate a hunt to them every year, black bear hunt, and they've had to move it to Boise now because it's just so big. So it's a movement, and it's valid, and they're doing some good stuff for sure.
I think that meat thing is an important point, though. That's a great crossover for young people today that plays a, you know, high importance on all natural organic meat.
Yeah, I mean, for instance, 10 years ago, I would bet that 10% of my hunters would take home bear meat.
Really?
Yeah, and so I would, you know, and a lot of outfitters would just, you have to bring it back to your place of residence, and you can just dispose of it as you wish. and a lot of bear's hull or, you know, skin were being thrown into a pit or into, you know, wherever they were getting rid of them. This year I had, I think we shot 26 or 27 black bears, and all but two of them were taken home.
Really?
So just go, and it's, well, the bear meat's amazing. I think at least where we're at, they're not eating garbage, and they're all eating good stuff, berries and stuff. But guys are just, yeah, more folks are taking that meat home. So we're doing a lot of cutting, a lot of freezing, and then they're taking them home.
Is this, you know, I would imagine this has, you know, I'm seeing a lot of numbers that say that hunter numbers are declining and stuff, but it seems like this is a positive thing to maybe help that. Are you seeing that in client numbers, or is that having any effect on you?
No. I mean, you know, during the big recession back in, I guess, 06, 07, 08, it was, you know, I think the 1 year I had six hunters in for spring bear. Last year I had 49. You know, as much as a lot of people hate to hear, I have seen and experienced what the new government has done down there firsthand.
Sure.
And regardless of what I think or anyone else thinks about who's in leadership, whatever's going on is enabling hunters to have more income to spend. And I've seen it big time.
Interesting. Big time. Yeah, that was actually one of my next questions. How's that playing an effect on you? That's really interesting.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. It's amazing. I mean, it's just people are more secure in the future and are willing to spend their, you know, their income.
Right.
That and so, yeah, I see it on all fronts with bears, moose. You know, bears kind of come in, I mean, they come in waves. People, you know, you can only shoot so many bears. Guys want the rug, they want the life size, they want whatever, but it's not like whitetail where you're going to go shoot one every year.
Right. Except for your
yeah, you know. So, yeah, it's, you know, but right now the trend is up. I mean, I'm probably 75% booked already for the spring, and usually guys aren't calling me. I fill most of my stuff after tax returns come back.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that there has been a shift as far as people, mostly in the outdoor world, and I'm sure they see it all over the place. I know friends of mine who are outfitters with ducks and geese and cougar hunting and whatever, just, yeah, it's good. Now, I've been in it, doing it a long time, so I have a base of people who, you know, will refer others, and so I'm not saying that from a standpoint of somebody who's just getting into it, you know, that's the same thing, but it seems that most of the folks who are outfitters that I know, you know, it's good. It's been good, so got to ride the wave, because who knows, there might be another one of those crazy.
You never know. Yeah, you never know anymore. So going back to your guiding work, you guide for a lot of what's the hardest thing that you guide guys for?
Moose.
Why?
Yeah, moose. They're finicky. And moose are probably, when they're coming in and things are going well, they're awesome. When they hit the ground, you're just shaking your head going, what have I done?
Right.
and that's 12 years of guiding them and hunting them for more, it still blows my mind how gigantic these things are and how hard it is to get them out. And, you know, everyone's so gung ho to, hey, let's hike 4 miles into that valley and kill a moose. And I'm like, dude, first of all, there's big bears around here. We got a lot. I mean, our grizzly population is very healthy. And I don't know if you saw Brian Call. He had a grizzly charge him.
I saw that
a year ago.
Yeah. That was by you?
That's good. Yeah, he was hunting with, Brian hunts me and Ranella too. And Ranella got charged by that sow with three cubs. And Colin,
I saw that
with
video
him.
Too. Yep.
That was there. And as well as when he got ran over by the moose.
Oh,
was
yeah.
There
so
too.
That, that was really funny. I'm sure not for him, but for me watching from my house, that was hilarious.
That was all happened in 1 week, man. I mean, the bear, that situation in and of itself was borderline. It could have gone really, really bad. And if you watch that video, Callahan was on it. He knew what was going on in Ranella, who's a great dude. He's looking for other bears on the hillside as this thing's coming towards him.
Right.
It's fascinating to watch that interchange, you know, between those two. Callahan's like, you got your pepper spray? And he's like, what? You know, it's like,
yeah, I saw, he didn't seem
here they come.
Prepared for that.
And so, and then, you know, 4 days later, they're on the river and, you know, he made a shot and he had a misfire or something with his gun, and that thing got up off the ground and pretty much hit him down. And we had to dispatch them. But, and that could have gone terrible. I mean, those things are heavy and they can boot stomp you in a heartbeat, but learn a lot of lessons from those things. But yeah, Moose would definitely be the one, you know, cause it's kind of, you can go with nothing, and then bam, here he comes. And then it's over. But if you don't have the right folks in camp who are patient, and if the weather is warm or whatever, the variety of things that you know, get these things to get up and move or bed down for the day or whatever, you really got to be. And that's where probably my counseling degree comes in handy, because you really got to talk people off the ledge with moose, because they don't understand. It's not like elk where they're bugling and you're running and gunning. You're not running and gunning. You're right. Hunting sign. So, yeah. Anyway, that's probably the toughest. It's a jungle, man. I mean, it's just flat out jungle.
It's thick and stuff where in there. At. You know, I'm an excellent moose hunter. I don't know if you knew this. Every time I go out,
I read about that.
I see tons of moose. So if you ever need help, just let me know. I'll find them for you pretty quick. You just got to tell me to look for there, elk, man. And I stumble. I think I get the habitat confused. I think that's my big problem.
Well, I just hire young guys who just, they just
how many
go.
Guys are
and, usually in the fall for moose, I'll have at least two guys, and then mule deer. I don't have a lot of tags for mule deer. I do lease some, but I have another young guy that works with me that's awesome, and because I own six tags and I lease between four and six more tags.
Okay.
In which case I'll hire more, so you know, another one. And then in the spring for black bear, I have two to three guys who guide.
Screw going to the gym.
I know, that'll keep you, those guys are in good shape by the end of it, I bet.
Yeah. Black bear is not a highly physical thing. Moose can be. Mule deer, it's a desert. It's wide open. Yep. And so it's not too bad. But yeah, those young guys are in way better shape than I am. So it's all good.
What's the hardest thing about being a guide? And maybe that's the type of client, or maybe that's running the business or not hunting. What's the hardest part about doing what you do?
Yeah, that's a pretty good question. I would say dealing with personalities.
Yeah. So you get a lot of guys that really come in and tell you what they're going to do. They're not really receptive to what you're going to tell them?
Not the first few days, they're not.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of
most
slap
of them
in the
are,
face,
are totally cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm used to it. I'm seriously, you get guys that come in and they run a business and they boss people around and they're used to doing things their own way. They don't like to be told what to do. And I have no problem with that. You know, okay. I just tell them this is how it's going to happen. And I've had to have a few pretty close heart to hearts with guys. Just like one guy shot a bear and he had two bears and I wanted to take photos. He's like, man, we got to get going. I want to kill another one.
Yeah.
And he just kept bugging me. And I said, dude, I don't care who you are back home, because you're not that person here. I do not care.
It levels the playing field a little bit.
Well, and when you know, Rob Smolak is an easygoing guy. Rob's very, he's Rob's good hunter. And he has his way of doing things. And he likes to walk and walk and walk and walk and walk. And which is fine. But sometimes you need to stop and you need to watch. So, but no, I mean, the pluses definitely outweigh the minuses. Yeah. I mean, I don't know for me what the downside, I think maybe early on the downside was you miss stuff like Halloween.
Right.
Which now that my kids are growing up and Halloween hits, it's like, dang, should have just brought somebody in when did that. Cause those days are few and all of a sudden you blink your eyes and they're gone, you know? So it's a tough lifestyle from the standpoint of being married and probably had a lot to do with, you know, with divorce for me. Cause you're driven when you're your guys' age, you're trying to make your living and get yourself set up. And a lot of times you overlook things that are pretty important besides that. So yeah, maybe that.
Yeah. That's great stuff. Does this change the way that you think about hunting when you go yourself, or does it impact how fun it is or exciting, or is it just as exciting every time?
No, that's a good question. Yeah, for me, the hunting part, I mean, for myself, I love to go out and hunt, but it's not as soon as I'm done, am I looking at the next thing? Even now with just living at home with my wife,
yeah,
you know, I came home and then now I'm going to head back out. But it, from a solely a meat standpoint, my freezer is always full because guys don't take home all their meat. So I always have a freezer full, you know, did a lot of hunting earlier on and killed some nice stuff. And so I'm fairly particular when I go out, especially for mule deer. So yeah, for me right now, I like to try a new thing. So like coos deer and axis and pigs and birds, you know, but, yeah, I'm not quite as, like I have to go kill something. Yeah. Not like Aaron Schneider.
He goes hard.
You
can tell. Going back, I mean, you mentioned a little while ago, you shoot a longbow. Have you always shot a longbow? I asked because Jared and I switched to the traditional archery. So it's always good to connect with somebody that also does it.
Teach me.
Yeah, I switched over in 85.
Okay.
Yeah, I was shooting a Martin Firecat with the overdraw and everything wrong, right? So, and actually the first elk I shot was with a Cougar II, Martin Cougar II, with the satellite broadheads that were carbon blades.
Yeah.
With the orange ferrule. Yeah, I didn't even find the blades. Don't know where they went. So, you know, and it's a steep learning curve, really, with, you know, when you switch over, because all of a sudden you're not shooting those far distances. And back then, far was 50. Now,
right.
Ridiculous with how far you guys can shoot. Like I had Levi Morgan up for mule deer. Do you know who he is?
Oh yeah. Yep.
Okay. So I've never seen anyone shoot like that. Like on the block target, there'd be, you know, the four circles, and in between the circles, there's a little black circle, like the size of a golf ball.
Yeah.
And he is hammering that thing at 80 yards consistently.
Yeah. He's amazing. That's
incredible.
And that's a par three for me. I couldn't hit that thing. I couldn't hit that thing at 10 yards.
Right.
That little dot, you know, maybe one out of five times, maybe. And he's just, so things have changed as far as the whole scene and people being you know, accurate.
He's a special talent too. There's like some kind of something weird. He's a mutant or something.
I feel like we need to have a contest now.
What's that?
Someone needs to take a shot with their traditional bows
and not
80 yards and see who can get the closest.
You got to aim real high for that. Yeah, that's right.
What do you say, Jeff? You win?
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely. But no, he's a good dude. But yeah.
How'd you get into hunting?
My dad. Yeah, my dad grew up in Montana, and they had to hunt to fill the freezer, and so I don't think he knew what he was getting himself into. But yeah, he's the one who got me into it for sure.
So you spent a lot of time. Did you ever come out east and hunt?
No. No, I used to do the Harrisburg show a lot. The guys that I knew in Pennsylvania, Pequa, P-E-Q-U. Anyway, it's near Lancaster. That's where I used to stay. Well, I thought whenever that was happening, it was, you know, wintertime. And no, I've hunted Texas quite a bit, pigs, and I have zero interest in hunting whitetails down there because, you know, I don't want to shoot the wrong one.
Right. they're very closely
mounted. They're crazy about that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's like, yeah, you can, you know, they're pulling up pictures like, this is so-and-so, and you can shoot him. I'm like, listen, I just want to shoot pigs.
Right.
I do not care about whitetails. I kill good whitetails, where I hunt whitetails or giants, and I can shoot whatever one I want to shoot.
Yep.
And they just kind of look at me like I'm crazy, but, and turkeys and stuff. So, yeah. Yeah, nothing out east, really.
Yeah, that's cool. So, going back even further, you mentioned you started with hunting with your dad. I mean, is that some tradition that's been going on in your family, or is that starting with him, or how did that go?
Just starting with him, yeah. My brother, he couldn't shoot very well, so he switched over to skin, and my dad hasn't hunted since, he's 85 now, so he can't hunt at all. But I did take him on a fly-in hunt for moose. He shot a nice bull, but that was a long time ago. But yeah, no, it's, I ran a little bit in the family. Grandfather on one side, he hunted quite a bit, and he shot a goat up in BC in the 30s.
Oh, wow.
And always had that hide, which always was kind of intriguing to me. And he laughed when I told him I was going to get a bow in the 80s. Yep. And he's like, yeah, right. And then when I killed a nice bull, he carried that picture in his wheat truck for everyone to see. So yeah, I kind of, you know, but it wasn't like I was surrounded by aunts and uncles and cousins that hunted at all. Yeah. I grew up in Washington State, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very, very much, you know, it's a little different here, you know, where even when we grew up, we got deer camp where you have, you know, I'd go to deer camp with my dad, my, you know, my uncles, my great uncles, cousins, second cousins. And it's like.
It's a religion in Pennsylvania and Michigan, though.
It is.
You go to the UP and get your cabins, and you go up, and it's a rite of passage.
Yeah, and you don't see very many deer up there anymore.
A lot of beer cans.
Yeah, that's right. Deer. So you've taken your family hunting. Have you taken, you know, your daughters, your wife? Do you guys all kind of go together? Is that something you guys do together?
No.
No?
No. No, my wife has zero interest in hunting because she doesn't like the cold.
That's fair.
And the daughters, they, you know what they, I brought them up doing was shed hunting before it was cool. And so they've done a lot of shed hunting with me when they were young. And actually Dwight Shue did an article on them in Bow Hunter. My oldest one found two different bucks that were over 200.
Sheesh.
When they're at schools on strike. So, but now as far as hunting wise, they steal my meat out of the freezer, sure. But yeah. No, they don't have any interest in really going out and killing anything, which is fine.
So that's one of the things we have to look forward to. Daughters just coming over and stealing a bunch of meat.
And basically leaving again.
Yeah. The hard work.
Freezer hunting.
Yeah.
Freezer hunting.
And they don't take the burger meat. They just, they take the tenderloin and take the straps.
Sure. Why would you steal why wouldn't you steal that?
I think that gives you an
excuse
to get a lock and key.
Yeah, that's right.
And as the dad, you're just like, okay, yeah, take whatever you want.
I don't say no very much.
Glad they're over there.
Yeah, I don't say no much. I feel like that's, you know, that's mom's job. She could say no and then get mad at me for saying yes later on.
Exactly.
How's your season going this year?
You know, it was a tough season. Moose was, we worked hard for the moose, and it was cold in early September. And I think those bulls, started fighting. And then when once the cows came in heat, they were a little bit tentative to come in. We worked hard for the bulls we got. We didn't, our biggest one was 36 inches, which is small. We typically will kill one that's, around 50 or bigger, which is big for a Canada moose, but not this year. It was just, there's a lot of moose around, a lot of signs. It just was really hard to rustle them up. Our river was really low, so we couldn't float it, which is kind of a nice way to access country that other really people cool. don't. So like what you guys have with your opening day of whitetail, we have up there for moose.
Oh, really?
And you'll get it. Yeah, and I don't know if you know who what Newfies are, but they're from Newfoundland, which is a province way on the other side of Canada. And we have a group of Newfies that come in that, it's like three generations or more. There's like 40 of them. They just cruise the roads, and they used to dump their cans, but I would pick their Budweiser cans up and take them to the older guy in camp, and he'd rip the young guys apart for littering. So moose was tough. Mule deer was a tough. I mean, opportunity was insane, but we had a lot of misses. The last week, I think we had 12 misses between two guys.
Oh, man.
Two hits on bucks that were over 185. They were giants. Just for some reason, just weren't getting the shooting this year. But lots of game. And the mule deer is world class. I mean, Southern Alberta is world class. So it's always fun, but.
The guys that come in camp, are they usually, are they usually pretty good shots, or are they, ready?
Yeah, they all tell you they are. they're all win all sorts of 3D. Now, all the guys that came in this year, which I know I'm usually booked with mule deer 3 or 4 years out, and very, very particular on who comes up. Obviously Levi Morgan, first shot, killed one.
Yeah.
Aaron Schneider, he killed one first shot, and then after that it was wounds and whatever. Mule deer are tough because they getting close to them isn't necessarily the issue, is being ready to shoot when they stand up. And so it has everything to do with watching their antlers, their body language. And when you they stand up and you're in their living room, mostly with guys shooting traditional nowadays, and I don't know how you guys shoot, but most folks are drawn back with 3 under.
Yep.
They got a clicker.
Yep.
They're waiting 5 seconds. Doesn't work very well when a deer is like, who the hell are you? And right, they're on their way. So
he got you. He stands up and picks you off. Yeah. I mean, you give me crap for the, Jared gives me crap for shooting a clickety click clicker on mine, man. But it's, I got like 3 squirrels with it too.
If
so
a clicker gets me a deer, why haven't you been advertising that?
I don't know. It's my secret.
Well, when Aaron drew back, the buck was bedded, didn't know he was there. And when he hit, when that clicker went off, and his is very quiet, man, that head whipped back and looked at him at 18 yards. But by then it was too late. The arrow was already kind of through the lungs at the time. But and I'm not saying that's bad. I mean, I shoot, split finger, and I touch and go, and, Aaron will call me a snap shooter, which, whatever.
That's like a diss in the traditional world, right?
Yeah. But it doesn't bother me too much. I can't shoot the other way. I tried to go 3 under and hold it, and I can't hold it. If I have my eyes closed, I can, but if I'm looking at a target, I literally cannot hold
it. Yep. It's a brain.
It's
yeah. That's all your brain.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching Aaron Snyder has been doing it for 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah. He switched over Well, he killed his bear with me, his first big game kill. And you know, to Schneider's credit, he's kind of like the Trump of the traditional world. he's brash, but he backs it up. The old school guys, you know, would make comments and say stuff. And the way Aaron is, he'll go right at you. If
really?
You cut him down or say, oh yeah, he will be on the phone with you immediately. He, you know, 100%, does not take it. So, but he shoots 200 arrows a day.
Really? Wow. With a trad bow, I mean, your arm's got to be pretty tired, pretty shot after
so
a
I
while.
I saw him rubbing his elbow this year. I'm like, dude, you're going to, because he's not a sprint. I mean, he's 41. I mean, he's in killer shape and he's mentally, you know, whatever. But he, you know, he might come across as being very, like, ego and whatever. But he works hard and he takes it very, very, very seriously. And he's a heck of a shot. But more importantly, he's an amazing hunter and can get in there and knows, you know, what not to do, I guess is the word. So,
yeah, it's a good client to have.
Have you had him on your podcast?
No, we, you know, Joe, I think Joe, you're on here now. Joe, I think you know him a little bit. We got to get him on. Maybe if I maybe make fun of him, I can, you know, trick him into getting on the phone and then it'll be too late and then we can interview him.
Just put him out.
Yeah,
put him
out sure.
That Schneider is bisexual and he'll call you.
Hey, you hear that? when he tunes in, he can hear that shots have been fired. So jump on and defend yourself. We'll give you an open mic and you can fire back at Lander here. I got to ask you, we're coming up on time here, Jeff. And so I want to make sure we respect your time, but I do have to ask the question that at least it's my ongoing question for almost every guest that we have on. And usually I ask somebody, what's the least useful or, you know, the worst thing that you have in your pack right now that you bring? And that's kind of a waste of space. But for you, I'm actually going to rephrase it and do a special question today.
Here we go.
What's the one piece of equipment that most of your clients bring that is useless, that they don't need, that's a waste of space?
That's a great question.
Good, because we love hearing being put on the spot.
Yeah, that's right. I could have told you this one ahead of time, but nah.
You know, probably the one piece that irritates me the most is the rangefinder. Okay. Now, and let me tell you why. Is because if a guy or gal could use a rangefinder once, let's say a bedded mule deer at 30 yards, and you hit it, you know how far he is. No one believes the numbers. And so it's like whack-a-mole. They're always, whoa, they're pulling it up, looking. And if the deer happens to be looking sideways and he sees that movement, they're gone.
Right.
But it's a necessity because the art of judging yardage is gone.
Yeah.
Gone. No one even, I think of it in terms of 10 yards, you know, like from playing football. I can tell how far 10 yards is and I can figure it out pretty darn closely. But otherwise, wow. Yeah, I don't want to go with the expandable broadheads because a lot of people shoot those.
That's a big can of worms.
But they've come a long, long ways, and there's no denying now that they're very, very effective. But early on, I banned them in my whitetail camp in the 90s.
Really, just a lot of wounding, or is that?
Yeah, and just things opening up, and you know, Rob killed, I think it was 189 inch mule deer with me way back in the day, and his. I think he was shooting Gravedigger or something.
Yep. We've had issues.
Grim Reapers?
Yes, Grim Reapers. And it came open and it went down the rib cage of this giant buck. And, you know, Cal was with him and they got it all on video and whatever, you know, whatever. But I think in thinking here, probably the worst thing is the cell phone.
You're not the first person to say that. Why is that?
Because everyone's trying to be somebody. I mean, a lot of people are. They're doing selfies. They're doing trying to get their animal on video, and they're trying to get this and this. And just like, dude, we need to hunt. You know,
right.
It's not like you need to update your Instagram because you know, do it after you kill something.
Right.
But the cell phone seems to take a lot of energy away from focusing on what you need to do and how you need to do it. So everyone's trying to document how vitally important they are. And when really no one cares.
All right. That actually, now I have a short follow-up question for that. You're talking about somebody that you bring in. I know that was supposed to be the last question, but this is the real last question. So describe your ideal client. So, you know, what's the person that like, what are they ready to do?
My ideal client is the one that puts the animal ahead of themselves. So meaning you know, instead of self-promotion and what I can do, that they respect the animal they kill and are happy with it. Instead of saying, oh man, you know, what's his spread or what's that main beam or what's a skull or, you know, how much do you think he'll square? It's like, he's dead. Doesn't matter. And because everything now is about numbers and, you know, skull or whatever on a bear or the what it would square. A lot of guys from your area is like, how much does he weigh?
Yep.
It's like, well, he weighs 40% less than he weighed with 6 months ago.
That's right.
So yeah, I would say the ideal client is one who really appreciates where they're at, the country they're in, the animal they're hunting, and what it took for that animal to get to the age that they are. And I'm speaking a lot about bears because a big bear has gone through hell to get to the age of 8 or 10. It shows in their face from fighting and just survival. So yeah, I would say a respectful hunter who loves what he or she is doing and you know, is honorable to the animal that they're chasing. Makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Jeff, I really appreciate you taking the time to come and talk to us tonight.
Yeah.
Really excited to just get to know you and hear more about what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the opportunity. And you guys are way more organized. And
really?
Like, hey, what are you doing tomorrow? Like, what do you mean? You want to do a podcast? Like,
We try to prepare.
Yeah. Oh, you're prepared. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
2 months out.
We're going to quote that. Yeah, and that's going to be the tagline. So, all right, Jeff, well, thank you so much. We'll keep in touch and we'll talk to you soon.
You bet. Hey, thanks for having me on.
Thanks. Yep.
Thanks, Jeff.